be concise. We'll spend what time we need to.
You have a student get hit.
No, we had a student get hit during alternative spring break. We were inside the show, just crossing the street.
At least it wasn't under.
Okay, well, I apologize for the technology, that this would go a lot better with the presentation, but if I could ask you to go to tab O, or G, it's G. That should be the Senate Bill 102 discussion. There is a slide deck in there. Oh, you got it. Okay.
You have to do the lines.
Hey, Rich, why don't you close a couple of those blinds? Just those first couple, I think, that make the difference. We want to see a little bit of sunlight after being in that dark room downstairs. Don't close them all off.
We're trying to lull you to sleep.
No sunlight, but it's light.
That better?
There we go.
So while this loads up, so tab G has my slide deck in there. And so really, Senate Bill 102 completely changes the capital development process for higher education. And it creates a two-part process, which that's the main point of the presentation, is to talk about that there's really two processes, that the first is the same as what we've been doing before, that we have a prioritization process, and the second is a funding formula, so that it provides $73 million of capital funding for our projects in the system.
Yep.
There we go. Okay, well, this is what I want. I'll just talk off of this. We don't have a lot of time, so I'll skip over a lot of the detail that the capital committee will cover in April. But I want to give a high-level overview of what happened, as well as an initial proposal that we've come up with of how to implement this. So there'll be a lot of implementations. I'm probably looking at about four different policies to be able to implement all this. So we'll be bringing that forward. But to talk to the process, so there's two processes, and you can see the dotted line. The second process down below, this is essentially the same process that we've always had with one exception that I'll talk about. But I'll start with what changed. And so this is the completely new process that the legislature put $73 million of ongoing funds. So that means every year we will have $73 million to allocate to state-funded projects in the system. And to do that, they've asked us, or asked you as the Board of Regents, to allocate the funds. So decide how to divvy it up with some criteria. And they've given six criteria that are statutory, so these are non-negotiable. These are the criteria that they put into the bill. So enrollment, performance metrics that are based on those performance metric funding formula that you'll approve later in this meeting. It's the same statute reference. Growth in student population, square feet per FTE, facility aging condition, and then utilization. So I'll talk about that in a minute, just more detail about those factors. But essentially, it's asking you to decide on the factor and the weight. How much to weight each of those, and then institutions would submit their metrics, and it would provide the basis for this $73 million allocation. So after that, there is a process. There'll be a new process for how institutions request the money. So once It basically goes into a bank account at the Division of Finance, where they will keep your money from the institution. Eight different bank accounts. But to use the money, there'll be a new process where the regents will hear the project and have some criteria of what they're looking for as far as cost and need. The regents will approve that project and put it on a list that's submitted to the legislature. It's also submitted to the building board for a yes or no recommendation. But ultimately, the legislature reviews the final request to actually take the money out of the bank account and put it into the construction project. With this, though, there is some new language. So before, we were limited on design and construction had to be go together. They call it phase funding. You couldn't break it apart to do design 1 year, do part of construction, and finish construction. Now there's more flexibility for us to use this money incrementally, so we can design, can even potentially maybe do construction phases. We can look at that. The second process is, at the same time, they recognize that there will be special needs, and the intention of the bill is to fully fund $100 million. They didn't quite get to that amount this first year, and so there's a second mechanism so that regions can still prioritize up to three projects based on the level of funding. And those projects would go through the same process, goes to the building board for folding it into the state prioritization process, and ultimately the legislature for the whole political kind of funding aspects of it. So that's the main changes in the bill. Really quick, I'll fast forward to kind of the formula, what the formula is going to look like. So it's really based on two main categories, students and facilities. And you can see how those three metrics kind of interface with what I'd say are the student measures and the facilities measures. And in each one, there's what I call a performance measure. So the performance metrics based on students, that's statutory. It's your completions and your taking care of students' need, those kinds of things. And then for facilities, it's utilization. And what we're asking the regents to think about, and so the purpose of this presentation today is to orient you to the changes and to help you start thinking about how we implement the actual metrics and the weighting, which is what we'll need to put in place before August 1st. And we have a Capital Facility Committee meeting where we'll talk about this in greater depth, but we also want you to give us some feedback. We have this time frame of implementation as we have a proposal for what those metrics might look like, as well as some potential weighting factors. And these are all in your packet there. And I'll flip to the final slide and just talk through it for a minute. I won't go into the detail that I had planned on, but this is kind of what we are looking at for this coming year. And ask for your feedback, and if there's any discussion, happy to answer questions either now or after when there's more time. But we're proposing that initially that there be kind of the 60% weight, so 100% of the points. So 100% would be total, 60 goes towards the student metrics, 40% for the facility condition metrics, with performance metrics, and both are weighted a little lower for this first year that we're proposing. Just that we want you to think about this, that performance takes time to implement, to improve on, and especially utilization is a very new measure that we've started looking at the last year. And so what you'll see is that we haven't quite caught up to some of those performance standards. And so the idea would be that maybe to set weights for a year or two and then adjust those as maybe performance increases or improves, changes. But you can see how, and we can talk about the particulars of the different metrics. Now we're at a different time, but you can see how that would maybe play out for the institutions. What it does is it allows them to start saving money and to do one of two things. They can save over a period of time to build a large project, or they can use the funds to renovate and maybe improve at smaller projects along the way that might help them better implement a strategic capital plan. And part of what we'd like to look at as part of our policy is to have institutions provide maybe a longer term look, maybe a 5-year plan of what are you going to do with these funds? What would you like to see done in your campus so that the regions can kind of help understand, are you going to go for a big project? Are you going to use the money to hit smaller projects? Do you need a one-time big request, you know, as you see your needs go out there? So, Mr. Chair, with that, I know the time's short. I'm happy to answer any questions or go into any more detail.
Okay, so can you go back to that first chart you showed?
Yeah, you bet.
So basically, for the top part, we're going to use these six factors that that came out of the bill, right?
Yep.
And on the bottom part, we're going to use a formula maybe similar to what we've used in the past.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is that if anybody wants input, everybody from all the institutions, listen, if anybody wants input into what that formula is going to be, and if we're going to change it and how we change it, then we're meeting on April 18th at the commissioner's office, 9 a.m., right?
Yep.
9 a.m. to 11, or it may go longer if there's more discussion. So if you want to put input into that formula, look at what we've done in the past, and we're, I think as a committee, we'll be open to making some changes and tweaking if we need to, but you know, you can submit us ideas before the 18th, or come to the meeting on the 18th, or both. We welcome that, and we'll discuss that. So that when we get into August, September, don't try to get us to change the rules then. But, you know, we'll set up the criteria, and the criteria will not be perfect. On the six items, the criteria won't be perfect. All we're doing is trying to get metrics to do the best job we can. And there will be faults with whatever we got, and there'll be some institutions will say, that's not fair to us, it's more fair to somebody else. But we'll do the very best job we can to come up with some as fair as possible criteria, and then we'll try to evaluate and do that. So that's kind of my message as the chair of the Capital Facilities Committee that I'm trying to put out.
So there's no discretionary points or region points? Like
no.
This bottom part, we can determine kind of like the scoring system we had before, Bob. We'll be able to continue to do something like that. But what I'm saying is if the institutions want input or anyone else, as far as that goes, on how we do that, come to the April 18th meeting or give us your feedback before that, because that's the time when we'll decide whatever changes we're going to make to that. Yeah. So, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, can I just add to that? Of course, send your, for staff of the institutions, let Rich know. You can even let him know before the 18th. You've got where kind of our initial take on this, and I appreciate Regent Clyde bringing up that's the time. And as we are on a lot of things, we're on kind of a quick pace here, but in order to implement this legislation, that's what we need to do.
And it should be pointed out that we've met with the vice presidents of business and finance, as well as the president saw this presentation, so that they have been given kind of warning and opportunity.
Now the other question I have, Rich, is the last sheet you showed us.
Yes.
Go to that last sheet that you showed us. Now this is...
There you go.
Now, this isn't set in stone right now, right?
This is
a recommendation by the staff of what you think
proposal.
Of what? I mean, we have to use certain criteria that have been dictated to us, but we have some latitude of how we weight it and how that works. So,
actually, what does this mean? So that's, and we've come up with, here's one interpretation of what this could be, and if there's a better way to do it, we're open to.
So I would say the same thing on this. We'll discuss this, and any of our committee members, if they have any input or want to study this over ahead of time, you know, get with Rich or any of the institutions, because we'll talk about, you know, what flexibility we have here to come up with what we think will be the best metric. Obviously, it won't be a perfect metric, but we're just trying to do the best job we can to make it as fair as possible.
Rich, on the square feet per FTE, does that take into account
those campuses that have a high number of online and that sort of thing, is it?
Yes, it does. That was one of the concerns that was brought up by the institution. So it does, it takes, so it's looking at, this one is FTE. Enrollment, we did headcount to kind of look at both. This one looks at FTE and then it takes out online and concurrent enrollment and uses that as the, that'd be the denominator.
So one thing I think we ought to make clear though is that we're gonna have a 2-hour meeting and I guess 3 if we need that. So if you've got some major input into this, then you need to be getting with Rich and Kimberly and working this through, because you know they're gonna make a recommendation to our committee and we're gonna have a limited amount of time to discuss it. And so so if you have something, if you can convince them to recommend it, then that's better. And if they won't recommend it and you want to still come and present your own case, then that's great too. But you know, let's do as much as we can between now and the 18th, so that when we get to the 18th, we're going to have a limited amount of time to discuss it and come up with a decision. So
just a couple questions, Rich. So at that 18th meeting, will you also be looking at the second criteria? Are you
both sets of criteria?
So we can come to comment on either one.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And then the other question.
The upper one or the lower one?
Okay. And then the other question I have is, so if you have that formula dollar kind of in your account, then when you, I guess I'm wondering, how does that work with an existing? So we have a heroin building in the queue, right? $30 million. So if I have $8 million to play with, then do I go to request the one time? For 28 or for whatever the math is,
so
I should be able to do the math. That's embarrassing.
We're all trying to figure that out too, President.
You are?
Yeah,
I don't know how to do that.
This is something I should have highlighted, that it's a phased implementation. So this coming year, they didn't fund any of the ongoing money. They put it out 2 years actually. So
the 73 isn't there.
No.
Okay.
And the reason it's because this is the year where they funded the three projects for 150, so Weber, Dixie, and
UVU.
So it starts in this year where it basically you get half of it, so 36.5, and then the full 73 is 2 years out, and then it'll be 73 indefinitely from there. But it is a phased implementation. So what I'm trying to say though is that what it does is it reduces our request to 3, but you would still, as a president and as an institution, you can decide how you want to approach that. And for sure, you can all submit requests for this coming year. And we'll have to go through that second half of the bill, right? Because there's no ongoing money. So then the years after, then you can decide, do you want to go which process, or even both? Mm-hmm. You can still submit, but it's the regents that can only submit 3 or 2, depending on the funding.
But this year we don't have to.
It gives the regents more authority to actually limit what's going forward to the legislature, but you can still request it.
And the way I understand it, and what I read, is that if it's under 50 million, then you can submit 3. If it's
right.
If the two projects are 50 million, then you can submit 2. And if the project, if there's one project that you're going to submit over 100 million, you can only submit 1. Is that correct?
Once we get the full 100 million in there, we can still submit 1. And so institutions, all 8 can submit a request to the regents, but the regents would have to decide what is the one priority you want to submit.
So the one question I have is that we used to do a list of like all institutions, so we put 8 projects there, and sometimes 5, 6, or 7 somehow rose up because of political situation. So is that now is the legislature or some politician going to come in and say, well, I know they could submit 3, but here's another one that we think is more important, and that'll be interesting to see how that happens. So it will be interesting to see how that dynamic works, because we're only going to give the 3 projects, probably.
Other questions or concerns?
business as usual. Because you don't have any access to funds till 21.
Let's go to FH.
I'm going to retire from buildings.
It's all like mini campus place. Campus semester.
All right. My name is Malin Francis. I'm the Director of Planning and Design for the college. Appreciate your time this morning. And I know we're tight on time, so if you remember about two years ago, we did a real comprehensive, large master plan that was a large presentation for you. Going with that same concept, we'll give you just a brief update since there hasn't been a ton of changes at the college. So there's nothing to look up at the top, so I'll just right here in front of you. As you know, we just finished this last year our West Point building, and we opened up in August. We had a wonderful grand opening. Many of you were in attendance to that. And that is kind of the newest building in addition to our master plan in Salt Lake Community College. The programs there are enjoying the space. They're actually benefiting from state-of-the-art facilities there. And actually, not long after we opened, we've been contacted by Boeing to retrofit one of our classroom labs to help and aid in some of their aerospace program training. So I think the building's doing what it's supposed to be doing, so that's really nice to know that. Also, just as an FYI, this building was recognized by the Utah Construction and Design Magazine for the 2018 Most Outstanding Project in Higher Education Large Project. And AJC Architects also received the AIA Award in Excellence in Architectural Design and Excellence in Sustainable Design. So it's a nice building for us to brag about and a good one to put under our cap, feather in our cap. As we move south, we go to our Jordan campus, which is just west of us here. We were approved last legislative session as a non-state funded project to expand or enlarge our student pavilion and make it into our student center there. The enrollments there are, I don't want to say they cap, but they're kind of restricted because of space. And so with this, we'll be able to retrofit some of the classroom or spaces that are being used by student services. And as we push them or move them into the student center, we'll be able to retrofit those spaces for other classroom expansions. We'll be taking that pavilion from about 14,000 square feet up to approximately 45,000 square feet. So it'll be a great addition for the students and a space that they can use for their activities and more focused student support there. And then lastly, at the very south of the valley is our Harriman campus. Again, we were not funded this year, but we were given approval to be able to program and design on our own dollar. And so we have met with DFCM this last week and have started the ball rolling in moving forward to get the RFP up for A&E services. And we're excited to get moving on that. As a side note on that, we have worked with Harriman City, and they moved into their large city hall and left their old city hall on Pioneer Street. And we've worked with them, went in last August, and opened up using their space, starting out at about 146 head count. It's about 33% at FTE. Mm-hmm. And it's been accepted, widely accepted in that area. And as we've noticed, it wasn't moving headcount, it was actually additional headcount coming to that area. So there is a need for our Harriman building out in that south part of the valley. And we're excited to get it going. So those are the few updates and changes that we've had to our master plan. Any questions I can answer in regards to Salt Lake Community College?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have High School College Campus Master Plan.
We need to do a motion on that, don't we?
I'll entertain.
Move to approve.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
All right, I'll just be brief on this. We're just proposing an amendment to our campus master plan on our Ridgeville campus. Last year we came to you and proposed relocation of future student housing from the southernmost border of our campus into a central location. By the way, this is Tabby, sorry, it's in Tabby in your book. And now we've started discussions with, or furthering discussions with the county and the city on a future community development center, which was located more centrally on our campus master plan. And as these discussions have taken place, we've decided that we found out we need a little bit more space. And as we've moved the student housing from the southern border, there is more space to relocate this to the southern border. This makes sense because it will be used by the community, so this puts us on the community border of our campus. It also allows for more space there, and our athletic space now will be located around this. So this will be rec space for both community and our students, and it will have the athletic space around it. So really just moving that location. So any questions?
Questions?
I have one. Yeah. Jake, with this, so the red square moves up to here, the blue square moves down to there. What are we planning?
So the blue was at the bottom and it's moved up here. That's the student housing. And that's what you guys approved last summer. Okay. The red square down at the bottom is the proposed new location.
What's planned for folks?
Thank you.
What's planned?
The athletic space will move south.
Okay. Other questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain motion.
So moved.
Second. No discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Tab J, University of Utah Research.
So I'll also be brief. And we are here to request approval to renovate our biopolymers research building, which we funded with the PPRB. We're here because we have a vastly growing research program. We're attracting wonderful faculty and staff researchers, and we have an assemblage of wet lab research buildings that are in need of renewal. This is part of a process that's been going on for about 5 years to address a couple of buildings. Winthrop, which is 40 years old, has had some improvements, and BPRB has had some improvements, and we're here today to talk about remodeling the first floor for biochemistry, which is a great growing area for us. A quick look at our campus. The PPRB building sits in our health sciences district. You can see a picture of it. It opened in 1995, 5 floors. The way the building is roughly organized is that in the lavender color, those are all labs. The yellowish area are really the faculty office space. What we're proposing to do is some renovation in the areas that are outlined in red. What we're doing is taking older small labs, opening them up, refreshing casework fixtures. You'll see we're also starting to creep into some of our faculty offices space so that to create more labs. We're asking our faculty to share more and be more efficient in our office space. The work will include quite a bit of infrastructure upgrade, which you'll recognize when you see the price tag, around chilled water, emergency power, data, and fire alarm. Given that it's a 25-year-old building, it's the point at which infrastructure starts to need to be renewed. Last slide. This is our schedule. We're here requesting your approval, and we'll go to the building board next week and plan to be completed by November of 2020. Our budget, $6.7 million in hard and soft costs. Questions?
Other questions?
Was
any comparison done to this with other lab remodels, or how do we know that it's competitive for lab remodels? I'm looking at the cost per square foot.
The cost per square foot is high, and it's because of the infrastructure work that needs to be done. And yes, we have actually built a cost database of our buildings, as well as other market buildings. We geo-modify to Utah and Salt Lake City, and we compare prices. And this is at the high end of lab space, but it is because we've hit the 25-year mark where our systems are at the end of life. So it's not just the lab remodel space, but it's beginning to touch the start of the infrastructure renewal.
So won't DFCM work with you too also on the costs and that when you get down to the nitty-gritty of actually building the space?
We work very, very closely with DFCM, but our delegation now is $10 million in construction, given that this is about $5 million. This building we would manage directly. But we have an in-house construction cost estimator. We work with Cumming Corporation, and we do everything. We have two estimators on every project, including the contractor. So we are in Salt Lake City in a really competitive market right now, and so you'll see this is early pricing. It's not bid yet because we haven't begun design, but we're competing to the airport and the prison in a very challenging labor pool. So we will, of course, go out and compete everything. So we will make sure that we're getting the lowest, best price. And we will bring on a contractor to make sure that we're getting their ideas on where we could be more efficient, more effective in our design.
What is the typical range? I mean, you said this is the higher end. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
We've done a ton of lab remodeling lately, but we've seen it from $450 to $750 project cost, $450 to $800, depending on how worried we are as we do feasibility studies and try to anticipate the market. But it really does depend how much you're taking out, what you have to deal with in the infrastructure of the building. But everything will be competitive and bid. And to answer your question, we partner with DFCM on everything. They're on our campus. They help us. We compare notes. We share information back and forth. They are definitely on our team.
Other questions? Hearing none. No, we need to make a motion. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Performance-based funding. That's you.
So under tab K, just a quick item for you. It's a small revision to the performance-based funding model metric associated with market demand. This is to realign this particular metric with the metric that's approved by the board in January for market demand purposes, and expand it to look at not just 5-star jobs, but also 4-star jobs, to better incorporate them with the work of the community colleges. So very simple, just realigns metrics that everybody's operating from the same metrics that we're not operating from the same metrics associated with this category.
Move for this option.
Second. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Mr. Chairman, could I just make maybe a plea, and maybe this is just myself, but I don't understand performance-based funding as well as I need to, and it'd be really nice if we could somewhere along the line have it. I don't know how the other regions feel, but have some kind of a longer discussion about and a little detail on performance-based funding and how it works and how it affects the schools. I know that the legislature just appropriated a huge amount of money for performance-based funding, and I don't really understand how that affects each of the institutions and what's going to be the impacts and how that all works. So I don't know when we do that, but it seems like it'd be nice to have some better training on that. And
we will be bringing it back to you in May. We'll go through it in detail, the model, and then also the allocation of how the money goes to the institutions. A lot of what's in the model is in statute in terms of the way the initial funds are divided. So I can walk through all of that detail and give you both a primer and then give you the allocation.
I just don't know if there's enough time in this meeting, because it seems like we're always in a rush in this meeting to get through our agenda. So maybe if we could figure out somewhere we could meet and have a discussion on that.
Well, and just...
I don't know how the rest of you feel about that.
I would second that.
Yeah, I would too, and I know that...
Right.
There's some big issues, and I think, you know, it sounds like they're being addressed here, but it seems like it's more, it ought to be competitive within the own institution of some...
It's the institution's performance against themselves already. Yeah. That's the way the model is designed. The way the model allocates resources, though, up front, is based on 50% of budget size, 50% of student FTE. So this is where we have the challenge of the big stay big and the small stay small.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate, and that's something that's in statute, and it's something that would have to be maybe an initiative from the board to go in and say, work with legislators to say, can we fix the way that this allocation actually
right.
works, instead of just dividing it based on traditional division of resources.
I think to Regent Clyde's comment, that might be our goal at some point, is to have a greater discussion, because I'm not sure that legislation really did understand some of the challenges some of our institutions face with that.
Well, I think the thing that happens is we hear the term performance-based funding, and that sounds really neat, because everybody wants to have people judged on their performance, but sometimes we don't get into the details, and so it's hard to speak with our legislators and others. And we need input from all the institutions about how this affects them and that, because that was a huge change, and I don't know if it really got totally vetted out exactly how it was going to affect each institution and how that was going to be dealt with in that. And so I think we really, if we understand it better as a committee, then it's easier for us to go advocate for something, and if we can understand from the institutions themselves what it's doing to them, and plus or minus, and it'll help us a little bit. But I like the idea of performance, but you know, we need to get that defined to make sure, is this the right performance, and is it really measuring what we want it to do?
And again, we'll go through what's in statute, and we'll arrange for a statement if you'd like, but we also will move into the statute. A big problem or challenge that we've had with this model over the last several years is that it's changed multiple times since it was originally adopted. So it is definitely time for a conversation with the framework. I can tell you the institutions aren't going to be thrilled with whatever it is, because it's a formula-driven model, and depending on what elements yeah. you put into the formula, some winners and some are losers, and for less winners than others, but we still get some money. But we'll go through all of the pitfalls and everything associated with the model as it currently exists.
Question on that. Would that be in this committee, or would it be in the larger setting?
Desires to do it.
I think I would.
Well, I think we leave that up to our chairman to help determine that.
Yeah.
It might take more than 15 or 20 minutes to talk about it. I don't know.
Well, presentation.
Yeah, right. Because it is pretty complicated, right?
It's not as complicated as you might think. Once you understand where the data comes from, it's actually pretty straightforward.
Okay.
It's number of computers in various libraries that meet certain criteria.
I think it's simplifying some of the, we have words like, this matches SOC and CIP codes based on the iPad's SOC CIP crosswalk at the 6-digit level.
Well, yeah, I tried to look through some of this information, and I was like, whoa. Well, then it'd be interesting to see how it affects each of the institutions as the formula changes, you know, like what was there before, what did this change do to EC institutions, and how, you know, and I'd like to hear their concerns or how they're going to attack that. So.
Well, yes, President.
I appreciate this too, and Kimberly and I have had discussions about this. Market demand is hard for statute, true, but nevertheless, that doesn't mean that we couldn't address that, readdress that with the legislature. Conservation is really the business that we're in, and hopefully we direct it toward the market, but, you know, that much of a distribution. So I know we're short on time, but I think this would be a very good discussion to have.
Okay, we appreciate that feedback and question. I agree with you. Jeff?
Yep. Are you ready? Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay, next up for you guys. This is new policy R840. This is in response to some feedback that I was receiving from the school's attorneys. And what they had found was that in many institutions, employees were using private email for institutional business. Some of it was because of convenience or other reasons. But as you can imagine, it causes a whole host of complications for the institutions, both legally and just from cybersecurity issues. And so the request was that as a system, we simply put a policy in that ensures that all of institutions have a policy that directs their employees to conduct any email business that is associated with their jobs on the university's email server. So if you're at University of Utah, it'd be your utah.edu email rather than your Gmail email. So that's really all this does is directs the institutions to make sure they have that policy. Some do already, others don't, so this will give them the encouragement to get that done.
Questions for Jeff?
One quick one. It seems like with the legislative session, we had requested some money for cybersecurity. Does this play into that at all?
This probably won't. This shouldn't have an impact or be impacted by that money. This is just a very simple policy that, as a matter of practice, as an employee, you use the system email. It won't require any new costs or any changes in practice. Just prohibits something that they were doing.
Other questions? Entertain a motion to move forward.
I'll so move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Tab N.
So another tuition-related topic for you all, not limited to the average, really just the general tuition increases. This board is responsible for also looking at the proposed differential tuition rates. What we mean by differential is that it's an amount charged above and beyond what the general tuition rate is associated for a particular program or type of course. Before you have in tab M 12 differentials being brought forward for consideration.
12 new ones.
12 new ones. Six at the graduate level and six at the undergraduate level. And a big chunk of these are coming from Dixie State University as they again grow into their university mission. These are things that they are actively engaged in and looking at. The undergraduate ones are all at Dixie State. And I want to highlight that just for a couple of minutes, and then if President Williams wants to add, he can. The concept behind the differential tuition in these programs, which are primarily health-related, is to move a course fee or program fee associated with health sciences into the tuition rate so it becomes more transparent for students who enroll in that program. So it's not necessarily an increase so much in terms of revenue that's generated, but a classification of where the revenue is coming from, whether it's a fee or whether it's in the differential tuition. The institution feels this is much more fair to the students, it's more transparent, and they know going in once they register for a course what the tuition rate would be, and so we are supportive of that particular concept.
And this was driven by the students, and when they look at what the cost of a program is, they automatically look at tuition. Then you have fees for other things such as stethoscopes and other health related. This just puts it all into one cost so that they understand what they're going to do in this program.
Thank you.
And the one thing that you'll also notice, you know, a lot of these graduate differentials are tied to the healthcare kind of programs. They tend to be more expensive in nature to provide. And rather than distribute the cost across everybody who's in the institution, it's for the students that are actively engaged in that program. Region policy does require that institutions put together a very comprehensive review as to what this looks like, how to other institutions offering similar programs, and all of that information has been included for your review. Based on staff review of the information, we are supportive of what the institutions have outlined and ask that you approve these as part of your discussion and the discussion regarding tuition.
So if it's part of tuition, do they have to decide when they sign up for the semester that they're going to take that class?
They're all accepted into these healthcare programs, so they won't pay that difference in tuition until they're actually in the program.
Okay, so it's part of the actual program. Okay. It's not for a specific class particularly. It's tied to a program.
Okay. But so, the way this works is it's mainly the more employable, higher wage jobs you're going to get.
Right.
Come out of the differential tuition programs, business, healthcare, engineering. And we've had this discussion before, and the concern is that you take the best prospects for a good job and make it harder for the struggling student to get into those programs. So, this one I'm a little more sympathetic to Thomas's argument this morning, but this percent. And I'm going to vote for this. I'm not saying we're going to not vote for it, but I just think, I mean, I don't know whatever happened to the discussion last time, because it's like there needs to be some kind of, if the schools are going to do this, there should be some extra scholarship requirement to help students that want to get into these programs that, you know, priced out of the market, or there's probably a number of different alternatives, but it's, I mean, it obviously makes a big difference to the institutions to have this revenue to run these programs that are expensive.
It seems like that could be a discussion between financial aid and the cost of the program. And I think, you know, the other side of that is it fair to a student that's not involved in this to help pay their incremental share of that, even though they're not going to be in that program? So it raises their fee up in something that's totally unrelated in that. So, but I like the idea of some kind of financial aid to help students that can't afford to get into those programs,
you know,
because of that.
I think probably the U does have significant financial aid programs in these areas. Other schools don't have quite the resources that they do. Can really have a discussion we had before. Was there any outcome?
One of the things that we know that also needs to be done, and this is a policy revision, this is something this summer, is as a impact? Are we needed? Are they funds actually being used for the purpose that they said that they would be used for? So that is part of the commissioner's recommendation on this particular item, is that you direct us to go forward with that conversation with institutions. As part of that, I would suggest that you also add or amend to say that can financial aid be integrated into what are the efforts, or in terms of the case analysis, can you provide
just a question, it may be in here and I missed it. But just give us an example, like I'll pick on President Williams since I'm sitting by him here. Surgical technology is going to go up $105 per credit hour. What is the current per credit hour?
Well, right now it's in the course fees of the course fees of business decision. I believe we're going up. I think it's that one. It's going down $10, but that's for the equipment costs.
So, what you're saying is you're already charging a fee. They're just going to put it into the tuition.
Right.
So for every one of the differential requests, it's the same thing.
There's an existing fee on every one.
Yeah.
And the other thing that it does allow for is the use of financial aid towards paying this. It classifies it under tuition costs, and so there tends to sometimes be some restrictions around where the financial aid is for. This is actually the one that's more expensive.
President Williams, so am I understanding this right? It's kind of an all-inclusive sort of a tuition. They no longer have to go out and purchase their own stethoscopes and SPIGs and all of that stuff. It just comes with the program.
Right.
you know, that could actually end up being a significant savings if the institution were buying all of that equipment in one bulk. Thank you.
I just think, like, my points earlier, it would be great to do a deep dive on something, because it's easy to add these types of things, but then it's important to review them over time, so if they're changing and costs are going down, they're being adjusted, and I have no doubt, again, that the presidents are doing that, I have no doubt the board of trustees are doing that. I just think if we're going to be voting on this, it would be great to see some of that data and to do a little bit deeper dive.
Thank you. Other comments?
Along that line, I know when we first started implementing differential tuitions, the institutions, they think we're requiring the different departments to come in and do exactly what you just asked for. Is that still going on in the individual institutions? And so we're doing a check and balance all the time. We aren't just using this as an easy way to get more, but they're coming in and showing how that's being used and some sort of value.
I can speak for this, and I speak for the other school, but yes, we have a committee that makes up those. This is recently new to things, and so we have a committee that looks at that. Two trustee meetings ago, we cut out, I think, 25 feet, 25 different fees because they no longer they were being supported by the university, and it was kind of like carryover from the golf phase, if that's kind of what we did. And so we monitor those, and we eliminate, and we also look at, we closely monitor the ones, because there are some programs that, you know, it's expendables, and so it makes it easy to buy in bulk and it's cheaper. But then there's others where you're actually saving those fees because you have to buy a very expensive piece of equipment for surgical technology or for nursing, you know, high fidelity mannequin for their simulation lab. There are different types of fees, but we do monitor those.
But for differential tuition in general, I don't think it's so directly tied to equipment costs or something. It's just higher cost of the program. The professors are more expensive, the researchers, the whatever.
We can certainly look into, when we do a deep dive, look into that specifically. And you know, that's really each one of the universities and colleges.
I think we are doing a fee audit, right? That is, so you are going to do a deep dive.
Well, and I think since we're beating up on Dixie right now, I think the thing that, you know, Dixie's going through is they're going through a transformation. You know, I mean, they were a junior college, and then they were kind of a college that had four-year degrees, and now they've become a university. And if you're going to, you know, if you're going to turn this into what it needs to be turned into because of the demand of the students that we need to have, it's going to cost more money to do these things, and we've just got to. Although what you're saying is you're kind of changing the methodology, but you raised each of them a little bit, didn't you?
Well, I just think it's a policy question. It's, you know, there's not enough money to keep tuition increases low and cover all the expenses of these expensive programs. So the solution is charge differential tuition, and you know, have the tuition more reflect the cost of the program. At some point, it doesn't really seem fair to the students that they're going to pick a high demand field and they're going to have to pay a higher level of tuition to it. So it just seems like at some point there should be a limit or some policy on its use. So, because it's definitely a trend, there's more and more differential tuition being charged and more and more come to us for approval. Yeah. There should be some underlying policy on.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I also think some of these high demand programs, there's high workforce demand. Look at the wage opportunities for students coming out of the programs. I was thinking yesterday about the cybersecurity program at UVU. Trying to keep faculty was really expensive because people like me are trying to hire everybody every day.
Yeah.
Cost to these people for most of that. But if you can get a graduate, they're making $100,000 or something like that, I'm not sure. And so I think all of that has to be, you have to come back to that. Some of the things that I look at the U, start to be expensive, how we're thinking about helping students who don't have the upfront needs to have these programs, pay for programs that have become really expensive to deliver. That's the
I agree, that's part of the solution. I mean, after taking your income after you graduate is a more painful part of it. But the best solution is financial aid.
I think it would be a great idea in the deeper dive discussion to look at how we actually are scholarshiping in higher differential programs. Because the only alternative to doing it that the way that's being discussed is to charge everybody more in a flat rate and then distribute accordingly, which would be in many ways simpler. It'd be a lot simpler to explain. We have simpler coding for when we do tuition billing. But there's also some, I think, principled objections to that approach as well. So it, probably as the deeper dive happens, looking at the percent of scholarship dollars on those differentials would be really helpful.
Well, I mean, I'm only guessing, you correct me, but my guess is yours are far, far higher than the other institutions are.
I mean, some of our programs, many of our programs have been pretty thoughtful about being sure that it doesn't become an access closed door for people by using their scholarships.
Well, I mean, you've got a mechanism to have that, but you've got huge donors that are making a difference.
Yeah.
And that's the best solution. I'm
probably making sure and continuing to mind sure that we are using it all the way. That's a good idea. So.
You know, I'm going to say on the scholarship side, so one thing we're really excited about at UBU is our first generation initiative right now, where we're trying to raise $15 million just for first generation, because often that's where you need the move from intergenerational poverty to something better. And also you would have lower socioeconomic levels there, so you need to help them. And having scholarships like that that we specifically focus on that segment of the population, I think is critical, because of the financial aid, you're targeting your financial aid a little more. And then there's probably room for industry partnerships, because industry is interested in human capital. So we haven't done this, but I think that's one thing universities could do. And I mean, in Singapore, we used to go to banks and companies and say, you are looking for certain types of people, we will find them for you. Those who are interested in banking, for example, and you name the scholarship. So there's things you could do where you can, you know, again, target so you're not closing, because your concern is, are we closing the door?
So
physician's assistant, which is our differential tuition, we're going to charge more. But Intermountain Healthcare is really big. The healthcare industry is getting bigger and bigger in Utah. So we could probably do something in that area and say, you know, you want to help students, ask the industry players if they help students for that program, because it's relevant to their human capital needs.
Great comments. Are you comfortable with us doing a deeper dive when we do? Talk about that in each institution. If you're comfortable with that, then are you comfortable enough to entertain a motion to move this forward to the board?
We're going to have to get a deeper swimming pool for all these deep dives.
It feels so good.
And we know just the contract.
Hang up your golf clubs, Ron. You're going to be doing a lot more diving.
My golf club, so I don't need a lot of water.
You're going to have to take a sabbatical. I'm entertaining the motion. That's all. Is there a second? Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So thank you.
Okay, really quickly, the audit committee met on the 21st of this month, and each institution brought their audit chair, sometimes a trustee chair, an internal auditor, president, and others to meet with us. So we met, we broke into two groups, we met with each institution for about 45 minutes an hour. And the process is going really well. I think we have made major leaps forward in the quality audit committee. They are one of our trustees and have a lot of financial background to take a deep dive on a regular basis. They're bringing in outside expertise when necessary, a local CPA or somebody that's been on the board of trustees with particular knowledge on this and add them to the audit committee. Dave Pulsifer is doing a phenomenal job. They're out to each of the institutions doing training of the audit committees and working with internal auditors, the small shops and the smaller colleges, somewhat of a disadvantage in this area, harder to recruit internal auditors. They're on their own and don't have anybody to talk to. It's a little bit overstated, but he's created a dialogue among internal auditors when they get together periodically. We met with Steve Hess and talked about the biggest issue in everybody's mind, which is the security of data in our IT systems. And we're really lucky to have him as part of the system. He is at the internal auditing process of all the institutions. It's on a biannual basis where brings people together from different institutions and they go test the firewalls and security aspects of the systems at each campus. And that's been really helpful. It's really a lot of improvements. Most of the institutions, for a lot of them, I don't know what percentage, but most are using Banner as the backbone of the academic system. And there's a shelf life of that of about 6 years, so that should be on our radar that placement is going to be needed. And so right now every school does their own thing in terms of the data storage and systems. And so one possibility in the future would be one system for the whole state and then post it on the cloud or whatever alternatives to do that. But that's a huge potential project. It's a few years out, but it needs some local stuff. Saving resources and increasing data security, that's one option to look at. Babes are in this and other than you're a great guy.
Oh, thanks.
No, I covered it. Yeah.
Questions? Any? Thanks for all the work. Appreciate that. We are well over time. And do you have any other questions on tab O to S on information? Would you like us to discuss information items? Are you okay if we just proceed with that? Anything else? Thank you very much.
You are who?
Daniel Johnson.
Considering the University of Utah, unless another school comes out and says they'll offer
more. What are you going to study?
Information systems.